Hello, and welcome to another episode of Lyricord's Early and Classical Music Podcast Show. I'm here with my co-host, Jeffrey Dooley. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hi, great to be back again.
And that music you hear in the background, in addition to being our theme music, is also a selection from the album The Recorder, Four Centuries of Recorder Music by the Pro Arte Recorder Ensemble. And today we are going to talk about the recorder and the history of the recorder and its extension into the flute. So I thought we would start with a little bit of discussion about the recorder. The recorder is a woodwind musical instrument, of course, of the family known as fipple flutes, or internal duct flutes, whistle-like instruments, which include the tin whistles and ocarina. The recorder is end-blown, and the mouth of the instrument is constricted by a wooden plug known as a block or fipple, and that's where it gets the name block flute. It was a very popular instrument from the medieval times throughout the Renaissance, and really, of course, has a new Renaissance now.
Yes, and also it was the flute in the Baroque.
It was actually the flute. Yes,
yes. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit later, and you get to sort of the middle of the 18th century, where the flute becomes the transverse flute, or the traverso, as it's called.
Mm-hmm.
But Vivaldi's concertos, all his flute concertos, were written for a recorder. Opus 10 is the most famous one, the flute concertos.
Mm-hmm.
And in Amsterdam, actually, when his Opus 10 was published, it was published for flute, crossblown flute, and strings. Mm-hmm. Whereas originally, Opus 10 is a chamber concerto with a recorder.
Uh-huh.
And one of the interesting things that I always find fascinating about the recorder is that it's the same instrument, really, that the organ is. So if you think of the pipes of the organ, you have a fipple flute, and you have an instrument prepared to play only one pitch. So
right.
The organ has lots and lots of recorders.
It's the automated recorder
and
orchestra.
Recorders of different sizes, and then you have the reed instruments in the reed pipes. But the recorder is basically the main flute that was used for almost all music, and it's very sensitive to the breath, and it's a wonderful tool for teaching singing, because like the human voice, how much breath you apply can change the pitch. Whereas the crossbone flute, traverso, or the modern flute as we call it today, when you blow across the opening, it doesn't change the pitch. It can change the volume, but not the pitch. But with a recorder, if you blow harder, the pitch will raise. So it's very, very sensitive to the kind of breath you use.
Right.
And you can add vibrato with the breath, and you can even add tremolo by letting the tongue trill in your mouth. And so it's like an extension of the voice.
Yeah, and it also lends itself very well to transcriptions from vocal pieces, of course, which are almost interchangeable often.
Often are, and very often recorders and cornetti would be used in place of singers, especially in the beginning of the Reformation in England, when the choirs were just finally being brought back and they still didn't have boys, were not trained well yet.
Right.
So they would use a cornetto, which is also a down-blown instrument, like a trumpet made of wood with holes like a recorder. Or they'd use the recorder itself because it had a certain vocal quality.
Mm-hmm.
Doing the treble parts in motets and things like that. And the other thing about the recorder, it's so responsive to the slightest movement of the fingers because it doesn't have keys. So you have more subtle control over the tuning. It's called forking when you play a part of an opening. So you can actually do chromatic music on the recorder, which you can't really do on the transverse flute as easily.
Right.
On the transverse flute with keys. Originally, the transverse flute is just like a recorder, except it points sideways, and instead of a fipple, it's a cross-blown opening.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's called the traverso, to travel across.
Ah, I see.
But because it didn't have keys, it was like the recorder, so it too could do very subtle tuning changes. So we've lost that a little bit with the modern flute because you have keys with pads, and so you have to either press it down or not. Probably there'll be many flute players who will say, but that's not true.
Right.
But in my experience, it's definitely true.
Well, let's listen to something from the 1300s by Alfonso El Sabio, two cantigas and canticles, and these are performed by the Pro Arte Recorder Ensemble of Argentina.
And this first one is with percussion, right?
I believe so, yeah.
So I think this might be a sopranino. I'm not sure. I can't remember. Okay. I'll know when we hear it. The recorders, by the way, most people do know this, they're made in families. So there's a soprano, alto, tenor, and bass, and great bass recorder. Mm-hmm. And sopranino recorder, which is a 2-foot instrument, like a 2-foot registration on an organ.
Okay, well, let's give it a listen.
There you hear it in octaves and different registration, mm-hmm. which the organ eventually does, several octaves being played at once.
Mm-hmm. The recorder was used much in the courts of bourgeois homes, as well as for popular music, secular music, music for pleasure, I suppose you could say. The first musical examples appropriate for the recorder may have been found in secular music of the 13th and 14th centuries, like the example we just heard.
Mm-hmm.
But purely instrumental music has been found as well. So
yes.
This would be music specifically written for the recorder, not transcribed from vocal music.
And in the beginning, most of it was vocal music that was played on instruments. And then it gradually developed its own repertoire, especially when the family, with the consort of recorders, evolved. Mm-hmm. And then they would write music for all the voices. They played motets in different voices on recorders.
Right. Let's listen to a Royal Estampie from the 14th century. Thank you. Lovely. We heard Royal Estampi number 7, La Doctia, and Saltarello.
This is interesting because it used the bass recorder as a solo recorder. And the bass recorder actually, in terms of the human voice range, is singing in the tenor range. So all the recorders, soprano, alto, and tenor bass, are actually an octave higher.
Mm-hmm.
So the soprano voice would be equivalent to the alto recorder.
I see.
Which is called the treble recorder.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bass recorder is in the range of the tenor voice. But then there's also the great bass recorder, which you have to stand up to play. It's like playing a Greek column with holes in it. It's a wonderful sound. It gives overtones of sometimes it can be a 16-foot pitch if you combine two of them together.
Does that take more breath or less breath?
Yes, it takes more breath because it takes longer to fill the tube.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to use a lot of breath. I owned a bass, actually, which I had to sell to pay my rent in 1967.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, they're also in different keys, commonly C major and F major.
Right.
But then there are recorders in different tunings.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that also we should mention is that there are what are called Renaissance recorders and Baroque recorders. So the Renaissance recorders, which we're hearing here, visually a comparison would be a pencil, a straight tube with holes in it, whereas the Baroque recorder, which most people are familiar with, is like a dowel in a railing of stairs. It's basically turned, so you have the different shapes. But the Renaissance recorder is simply a straight tube. It's a different sound, as you can hear. It's quite raw, quite a straightforward sound. You can hear the air moving through the fipple, and the tonguing adds a unique attack to each sound.
Mm-hmm.
The tongue is very important in the recorder because it controls the articulation.
The recorder is an instrument that most everyone's at some time in their childhood was taught it in school.
Yes, it was called the saxette then. And it looked like it was a plastic recorder-like instrument. And so I think this is one of the reasons that many people dismiss the recorder as being less important than the flute, because they learned to play the saxette in school. And so it's easy to pick up. Anyone can make some sound on the recorder.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, like anything else, you develop a technique.
And
becomes a virtuoso instrument by the time you get into the Baroque, a virtuoso instrument.
In the first 5 minutes of playing a recorder, you realize how careful you have to be with breath.
Yes.
Because that's what it's all about.
And especially. And in the Baroque recorder, especially the lower ones in F, the alto and the tenor, to play the low notes on the alto recorder takes a very controlled light breath, or it will break to the octave above.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all part of the technique. The Renaissance recorders are more straightforward. You know, they just blow that air through and you get this great straight-out sound.
Right. What do you want to listen to now, Jeffrey?
Well, this is a song of the day, which it's in French, but in English it's As Long as I Live by Adam de la Halle, who was a late medieval composer.
Mm-hmm.
And this we're going to hear, the tune is played, and then around it, probably originally improvised, was an improvised accompaniment. But here it's written down, and you'll also hear the psaltery used as a melodic line through it. So it's basically three parts, two recorders and the psaltery together.
Uh-huh.
And so a medieval person would recognize the tune, because these tunes were well known by peasants as well as court people.
Mm-hmm. And on the jukebox.
And the jukebox, yes.
beautiful.
And that was the second one. There are two of those Lahal pieces. Mm-hmm. And this one was, in English, Bears in the Pasture, by Adam de Lahal. So in this one, you hear it really in an early consort form. There probably were, I would say, four recorders in that. Mm-hmm. And also in the one above, you heard not only the psaltery, but the viol, which is the early form of the bowed violin. Mm-hmm. And you hear a little bit more polyphony moving on, but still those tunes run through the middle. Some recorder player in there is playing the melodic line, the famous tune, while the other parts are being composed around it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeffrey, what should we play now?
Well, now we're in the Renaissance, so we're going to do two pieces, the Pavana and Galliard for England, Pavana Galliard de Angleterre by Claude Gervais, the French composer, who wrote a lot of Renaissance dances, and this is for a consort of recorders. And then the next one is Anthony Holborn, an English composer, suite for five instruments. So this is a real consort piece for five recorders. Mm-hmm. It could have been performed with a mixture of instruments. It could have been viols and recorders. But here you hear all the recorders together. And in particular, in the Holborn, you really hear that wonderful articulation that brings out each note, almost like a gamba being played with a new bow stroke for every note. Mm-hmm. But this is what people really associate with the Renaissance recorder consort music, based on an existing melody.
All right, well, let's give it a listen.
Thank you.
Gorgeous.
Wonderful. So the first one we heard was by Claude Gervais, the French composer.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is by the English composer, Anthony Holborn. And the Gervais piece is a sort of a comment on English music because it's a Pavane and Galliard in the English style.
Right, Angleterre.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it is written like an English piece.
Mm.
And then the other one is quite well known, actually, by people who play recorders at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a court composer. And you probably noticed in this the wonderful use of the tonguing and the way the phrases were played. Some were played in a staccato fashion,
mm-hmm.
and then legato. So none of these were indicated. This is a decision of the performers,
mm-hmm.
which makes all this music so alive.
Right.
And it makes the sound is like five singers, really.
Mm-hmm.
It could be sung by singers as well. Very vocal style. It also is basically dance music. It's mm-hmm. a Renaissance dance, really.
Right. I love the sound of a recorder ensemble.
It's oh, yes.
So,
it's very hybrid.
Like it. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, let's take a break, and then we can come back and play some more, okay?
Very good.
Listen to what critics are saying about Jerry Willard's three outstanding recordings on Lyricord. About Jerry Willard plays, four centuries of lute and guitar. Unquestionable technical skill and superiority. Sparkling and entertaining, the New York Times. Displaying his talents on arch lute, Baroque guitar, 19th century guitar, and our modern guitar all within 60 minutes. Clearly a talented player, Willard weaves his way through this music with great sensitivity. Guitar Review magazine. And of the Baroque guitar, Peter Graham Wolfe of Musical Pointer says, a delightful selection of music for his Baroque guitar, played with engaging flair and recorded with immediacy. American Record Guide exclaims, Willard's approach to this music is elegant and graceful. If you enjoy the subtle charms of the Baroque guitar, this program is a delight. And about That Certain Feeling, Willard's recording of Gershwin masterpieces, James Mannheim of the All Music Guide says, Willard's transcriptions are technically complex, free in rhythm, and evocative of improvisation, an unusual tour through Gershwin's hits with a consistently high level of playing. Guitar Magazine calls this release a beautifully crafted and inspired record full of the effortless charm and character one associates with Gershwin's music. And, coming soon from Lyricord, Jerry Willard's Night at the Opera, featuring instrumental transcriptions for guitar from the world's best-loved operas. All available on CD or for download from www.lyricord.com. Order the complete collection of Jerry Willard's recordings today.
I'm back here talking with Jeffrey Dooley on the Lyricord Early and Classical Music Podcast. Why don't we jump ahead a little bit to Jan van Eyck? You set this up, Jeffrey.
Yes, van Eyck wrote a lot of music for the solo recorder, and it's really virtuoso music. Of course, now we're moving into the Baroque, where it becomes more of a solo virtuoso instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And he's famous for these, and you'll hear this one. It starts out rather simply, but it becomes a virtuosic display of technique,
mm-hmm.
all for the solo instrument without accompaniment.
Thank you.
Bach's solo work performed by the Pro Arte Recorder Ensemble, the unidentified soloist.
And this is from a collection called The Eden of the Flutes. Mm-hmm. And what's wonderful about this is you can almost hear the chords that he's sort of playing because the composer has written wide intervals. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine an accompaniment to this. You could invent a bassline accompaniment to this.
Sure, you can almost hear it while you're listening.
Yes, and you hear what's called a double tonguing, mm-hmm. where the tongue really moves quickly to make the changes of pitch.
Right.
That's a real virtuoso to mm-hmm. do that.
Some fast playing there.
Fast playing. And I'd also like to mention to your listeners that of all the recorder recordings I've ever seen, this has the most extensive liner notes I've mm-hmm. ever seen. A complete history of the recorder in every period, what it was written for, composers, how it was used. It's a fantastic booklet.
Thank you. And those are all our liner notes are available, download for free. And get them as a PDF file. You could have an entire library of Lyricord liner notes and without paying a cent. So
yes, and liner notes are so wonderful in understanding what you're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
All my life I've read liner notes when I first began getting recordings, early music recordings.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's why I figured the download world is great, but if you don't get the liner notes, you're only getting half the music as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly.
So we decided to just make them all available at no charge. You should be able to get the notes.
Definitely. So. It's part of the whole package, and it tells you about the performers and
right.
and the conditions under which they were recorded. And you're right, it's half the effect.
So, Jeffrey, I'm in the mood for a little bit of dance music on recorder.
Yes,
so let's set the
music.
Clock back a bit, and what do we got here?
This one is, my Italian better be better than this, a Cominciento di Gioia.
Uh-huh.
For three recorders, two viols, rebec, organistrum, and two tambourines. None of this music was written for any specific instruments, so it's not like later music where concertos for one instrument. That's why the music is new every time you do it. You pick up a flute, pick up a recorder, and you create new music.
And this is from Estampida 1 by New York's Ensemble for Early Music, also known as Early Music New York, recorded at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine back in 1994.
One of the great acoustics in New York.
Indeed.
And my first church show.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Also performing on this album, along with the ensemble, is the great Glenn Velez, the world percussionist. And he plays a variety of percussion instruments. But let's listen to
Cominciamento di Gioia.
There we go. Thank you. pretty sprightly there for 600-year-old music.
Yeah, it's marvelous when you think of it. And you notice that there's a drone being sustained throughout.
But it's not throughout. I've listened to this before, and it goes away, and I don't know where it goes away. Somewhere in the middle.
I think the reason it goes away is because the drone players are now playing strings.
Mm-hmm.
So those instruments probably have gone now to play the duplum and triplum.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go back to the drone when the other instruments come in. The other thing that's so wonderful about this music is the use of octaves. It gives the impression of more than one part, almost polyphony.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same sort of idea that we have in organ registration, where you have several octaves at one time.
Right.
So there's certainly a 2, 4, and 8-foot sound going on simultaneously here.
Well, let's listen to another dance, an English dance from the follow-up album to this, Estampida 2, from New York's Ensemble for Early Music, also known as Early Music New York. Let's give it a listen. From New York's Ensemble for Early Music, conducted by Fred Rentz. Anything you want to say about that, Jeffrey?
Yes, this is definitely English music, and you can hear the sweetness that was always described, that the English music making and sound of the music was sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Observant listeners will notice that there's a major third at the end for the first time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And English music uses a major third.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even a conductus that I've done myself with various choirs for possession called the Hymn of St. Godrick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, instead of parallel fifths, it has parallel thirds and sixths in it. So the use of the third was a uniquely English thing. And when you think of music as it goes on, the English music has a certain sweetness.
Mm-hmm.
If you think if you get into the polyphony of Byrd and Tallis, the third is the character of English music. And also the melodic quality is almost recognizable today.
Mm-hmm.
The other pieces we heard are more disjointed, full of parallel fifths and unusual leaps, but those sequences that go da 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 da, that could be 17th century.
Right.
So it's a totally different character with English music.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been good. I think we're going to probably wrap it up now. Next time, we're going to move on in our windblown experience to the Baroque flute. But in the meantime, we'll leave it there, and thanks for being with us.
Oh, this was great. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
This program, copyright 2009, Lyricord Discs. All rights reserved. On the next Lyricord Early and Classical Show podcast, Nick and Jeffrey discuss the origins and performance practice of the wooden Baroque flute and how it differs from the recorder and from the modern silver flute.
The biggest difference between the Baroque flute and what we consider the modern flute or the metal flute is that the Baroque flute is very simple. It is simply a tube, like a recorder, that has holes in it. But instead of being blown down through the tube, we blow across. And that's why it's called the transverse flute, the traverso.
George Philip Telemann is the composer of all the works played on this program, featuring the various Lyricord recordings of Baroque flutist Tom Moore and his colleagues. Don't miss the next Lyricord Early and Classical Show podcast.